Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. The show keeps rolling. That's exactly how the NFL has set it up. There is no downtime. I mean, we're talking about next week, David, and, you know, we said maybe we won't do a show, but it's Super Bowl week, so we'll see what happens. But, you know, we got a load of show just like we always do. We're going to go ahead and down to the Senior Bowl, bring in Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan. The man you know is the czar of the playbook. We'll get an update from Mobile, Alabama. We got our guy, Chris Sanders, forever Titans receiver, jumping on for Run TMC. And throughout the show, you'll be blessed with the miracles that my guy David James is over there working.
Yes, sir. Always, man.
This is what we do. Well, a couple things. We'll do a little housekeeping first. Obviously, we have to address the Tom Brady situation. He is now retiring, and he says it's for real. So we'll see what happens there. I believe him. He was fighting back tears in his post on social media, IG, Twitter, etc. And we'll see what happens there. But, you know, that brings to a close something that some of the local media here was, especially Jarrett Stillman. Yeah,
especially Jarrett.
He was really pushing the Tom Brady to the Titans narrative. I told him when I was on his show last week, he asked me to give percentages, and I just gave random. Like, I'm like, all right, well, 20%. Brady, 20%. Rodgers, 60% Tannehill.
Yeah.
That's just the way I felt it would work out. Turns out the 20% was somewhere along the lines of accurate. But, hey, I'll say this. We were blessed to see Tom Brady. I don't care if he played for your team or not. This is the greatest quarterback of all time, potentially the greatest football player of all time. And you look at what he's done so many times. You know, you talk about your Joe Burrows, right? You talk about your Josh Allen, and you say, hey, you know, you got to surround them with talent, right? Well, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl with David Givens, and Titans fans, you guys know of David Givens because he came here, cashed in off of that Super Bowl moniker, and, you know, didn't exactly deliver. But, I mean, this dude won a Super Bowl with David Givens, Deion Branch. You know, and Deion Branch went to Seattle, and you saw what happened there. It's Troy Brown. I mean, what more can you say about Brady?
Yeah.
And he was the offense. He, as far as like how the offense flowed. So you got to respect that, everything that he did. So I definitely want to take a moment to shout out Tom Brady. Hey, a big time career is just transitioning to another big time career, because he's going to be a very well compensated commentator for Fox, so that'll be something else to watch. But I wanted to open the show up with the offensive coordinator side of things. And I mean, obviously Todd Downing is no longer the coordinator. He was relieved of his duties, and there have been an assortment of names that have been associated with this position. You got Matt Nagy, you have Eric Bieniemy that was mentioned. I mean, there's a lot. And Mike Vrabel said, you know, down at the Senior Bowl, he said that he's interviewed a lot of coaches. So we will see how that search continues to work. But, I mean, nothing has really, like, come into the open as far as who he's been talking to. We know that Luke Steckel interviewed for the Chargers OC job, which was Kellen Moore was, like, unemployed for 16 hours.
Yeah.
The Cowboys, and he decided to part ways, and then he went over to L.A., you know, and he's going to orchestrate that offense. That's going to be a pretty good opportunity for him. And I can see him becoming a head coach soon, because we know how some of these offensive guys, it's very fast-tracked for them, unless you're Eric Bieniemy, of course. But that's a different conversation. I think Luke Steckel is a guy that they should probably talk to. If he's getting interest from another team, he could be a guy that they did talk to. We don't know.
No idea.
And that's the thing that's really strange about this, because normally, you know, these guys want to get that word out there. Hey, my client interviewed for this job, being considered for this job, because you want to spark that interest. But we're not really seeing that. Matt Nagy, though, that's an intriguing one. And I think when you look at Nagy, everyone will say, hey, this isn't going to work. But you have to remember, and they're basing it off of his years with the Bears as the head coach. Head coach, coordinator, two different roles. And some guys are good coordinators, but not so good coaches.
Exactly, yeah.
Some guys, i.e. Mike Vrabel, are good coaches, but not so good coordinators.
That's something
to consider. But typically, to become a head coach, unless you're dynamic and, a unique case like Mike Vrabel was, typically to become a head coach, you have to be really good as a coordinator. You look at John Harbaugh, DB coach, special teams coordinator. He got the job with the Ravens. So I think we have to pump the brakes on Matt Nagy as far as saying that is not a good option. And if you look at, some of the offenses that he was a part of, I mean, even his first year in Chicago, they were legitimate.
Yeah.
So he's done enough to show that he's able to orchestrate an offense. And then obviously the days with the Chiefs, he didn't necessarily call the plays. We keep hearing it again and again, the same old situation where Andy Reid calls the plays mostly, but the coordinators do at times call the plays. Eric Bieniemy typically calls in the second half. So Doug Peterson obviously came out of that as well. So when you look at their coaching tree, so to speak, Nagy, I think, is very qualified. And the offenses that he's orchestrated, I think, have been really good. Obviously, the Chiefs, that's something to look at. And he's currently a part of the Chiefs now. And I think it's good to get a piece of that type of action. And you look at Nagy when he took over. So he became the offensive coordinator with the Chiefs. And the offense ranked 20 in 2016. It became fifth best in 2017. Alex Smith, a quarterback who's very similar to Ryan Tannehill, had a passer rating, and he actually led the NFL with a 104.7 passer rating, 26 touchdowns, threw for 4,042 yards. Now, of course, that was the year the Titans went ahead and eliminated the Chiefs out of the playoffs, but that was the last season that Nagy had with the Chiefs. He went on to become the Bears head coach. So I'm intrigued by that. I want to see what happens there as far as whether or not he becomes the coach. He's currently, as I said, the quarterback coach and a senior assistant with the Chiefs. He kind of filled the Mike Kafka role, who Kafka moved on to be the OC for the Giants. And the Giants last year, had a pretty solid year. So you got Matt Nagy. As far as the candidates are concerned, I mean, Tim Kelly is another. And the thing with him that I know it's a stigma that a lot of the Titans fans have, whereas they don't want any hires from in-house. And I get that. It does make sense. I'm curious, and this is why I would ask repetitively over and over again, what is the role that Tim Kelly has in putting the plays together, in deciding what's up and what's down? And Mike Vrabel, Todd Downing, even Tannehill to an extent, because I asked him also, they were able to kind of push that down and not really answer the question. So we still don't know exactly what the role he had as far as like how much he put into the game plan. Now, you look at his history, 2014, he was a quality control assistant for Bill O'Brien with the Texans. Then he was the tight ends coach after 3 years in 17 and 18. And then 2019, he was promoted to OC. Now, 2020, he got the additional role as a quarterback's coach. I will say this, that last year, I believe, that he was there, their offense finished dead last in the league. So I understand Titans fans having some reservations there. I'll also say this. Tim Kelly is known for using a lot of 12 personnel, hence working with the tight ends as he did before. That's what he did the past couple of years. So I could see the Titans using 12 personnel. Again, if he gets the OC job, you would have, obviously, Chig Okonkwo, who I think is a budding star. Possibly Austin Hooper, but this tight end group is in the draft is chock full of prospects.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm going to ask Emery about Luke Musgrave out of Oklahoma State. We had – or Oregon State, excuse
me.
We had Jim Nagy last week speak about him, so that's an option. I mean, there are plenty of options, you know, as far as the tight end's concerned. So if they're going to use a lot of 12 personnel, Tim Kelly would probably be the right guy, and Rand Carthon is going to have to bring in some more tight ends and make it all work. I'm just curious just what they do. And obviously the Senior Bowl, that's an opportunity for coaches to interview. A lot of them go down there, and there are times where jobs are sprung out of that. And not only are we looking at an offensive coordinator hire for the Titans, they're also going to have to hire an offensive line coach. And that offensive line coach, as Mike Vrabel said, is going to have to be in lockstep with the offensive coordinator, who in turn is lockstep with the head coach. So there's a lot of chips that have to fall into place. You still also have a DB coach. The situation with Chris Harris is very fluid, right? Harris was supposed to come on and be the defensive pass game coordinator as well as DB coach. So he would probably be working with the corners, because typically Scott Booker works with the safeties. That's what he's done since he's gotten here. And this is a pass defense that was 32nd in the league. So by all means, they need as much help as possible. But Harris got the request to interview for the 49ers GM, or excuse me, 49ers defensive coordinator job, with D'Amico Ryans moving on to become the head coach of the Houston Texans, which is also news in the AFC South. I think that's going to really work for Houston. So that division, I think, is going to be on the upswing. It's going to get tougher for the Titans. But nevertheless, the offensive coordinator position is something that, look, you have to come in, you have to be innovative, you have to be able to scheme ways to get guys open. And Todd Downing did that to an extent. But one of the things that I think with him was the timing of the play calls. You have to have that knack for knowing when to dial up what play. And he did that at times with some of the screen passes and stuff like that. But then there were other times where it's like, this isn't a time where you want to get cute. It's 3rd and 2. Hey, look, man, I know they've been stopping the run, but you got the monster back there, 22, Derrick Henry. Trust him and your guys up front. Get you those 2 yards, right? No trick play. I think those are some of the things that this new OC has to come in and be able to have a feel for, right? And then also not be as predictable, right? The first down runs, we know the story there. That's something that has to be solved. And then it's just really dial up ways to get your guys the ball, man. Chig Okonkwo, Treylon Burks, these guys should be getting a bunch. And I'm talking about forced targets. I'm talking about plays where you send them in motion, and you know they run a swing route, and you pass it to them to get the hand. I'm talking about now routes where you know you take a step off the line, you catch the football, and you have blocking set up. I'm talking about tight end screens. I'm talking about those things to force touches for them. And you hear the word force, and you're like, oh wait, you're not supposed to force things. I'm not saying it from that tense. I'm saying make them the primary. Stress primary read on the play, right? And I think that's how you get the ball in these playmakers' hands. The offensive line is going to be the offensive line, right? There's, you know, whether it's Broderick Jones, Paris Johnson, Peter Skoronski, whoever it may be that comes in and you sign a free agent and you bolster that offensive line, you still want to help them out, get the ball out the quarterback's hands, into the hands of the receivers quickly. So I think, you know, as this offensive coordinator position continues to work itself out, it's going to be solved soon, because they obviously have to make something happen, because you can't go through the whole off season, you know, go through the Senior Bowl and all of that, combine, et cetera, without having your offensive coordinator in place. Now, one other name that still remains in the mix is Justin Outen. And he's someone from the Broncos. Now, we know that Sean Payton took over, so that's going to be something that will probably have to be solved as far as whether or not he gets retained. But, I mean, look, he worked with the Packers, you know, as a tight ends coach under Matt LaFleur, and it's just something about the tight ends coaches that draws interest from this coaching staff. So that's another correlation that you could see. And I know the Broncos didn't have the best year last year. I think you have to look at the 19, 20, and 21 years where he was tight ends coach with the Packers, and you even go back to the Falcons. So there's a tie there to Shanahan. So I think, you know, those are the things that you want to look at as far as how you go about bringing in this coordinator. So Justin Alton is another name. We'll see how this plays out. I'll be here. David will be here to bring you the news as it comes along, and we'll discuss it. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. I want to get into the quarterbacks with Chris Sanders. We'll be right back. What's up, everyone? This is Teron Davenport. I want to tell you about Sarah Chevrolet Buick GMC of Nashville. They took great care of me when I got my brand new Camaro. They have hundreds of new or gently pre-owned vehicles, special discounts, and monthly incentives. They don't have any market adjustments, zero dealer ads. Save, save, save. You could go online to chat, check availability, and purchase your vehicle without ever stepping foot into the dealership. Or you could go there and see my guy, Josh Lemon. Either way, check them out at sarahnashville.com. That's S-E-R-R-A, nashville.com. And tell them TD sent you.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
For you, fresh.
Strange. Here they come. Oh. Oh, yeah. The music fades. The lights dim. Ooh, I think we're going to go to the Madison Square Garden. Yeah. And now, coming to you live from Madison Square Garden, at shooting guard for your New York Knicks, wearing number 6, Trent Tucker.
And now, starring for the Houston Rockets, Ralph Sampson.
I'll be Ralph Sampson, you be John Lucas. We'll both have the mini froze and look like this microphone right here.
Oh, my gosh. I think I said that about 4 weeks ago. Man, that's the funniest name. I was going to call you the Chief or Algero, whatever it is, man. What's going on with you, boss?
Hey, no, man, just chilling.
That's what's up.
Trying to keep up with this Senior Bowl.
And is it crazy?
There's a lot of prospects. A lot of prospects.
True.
And that's the great thing about this season is, or just this season, meaning draft season, not just this year, but every year, you get familiar with a bunch of new guys, and there's a lot of guys to look at this year. So, I'm, you know, that's what's going on for me.
Yeah, man, I loved it. You said the Senior Bowl. I love the Senior Bowl. I mean, I told you last week that I went through it, and that's where you can jockey for position. There's a lot of guys that go there that are pretty good, you know, players, but not the well-known players that are in the country. So you go down there and you be good at a wide receiver, and you show that your skill set is amazing. That can jockey you for position to get up in the drafting board.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And there's some quarterbacks down there. This is actually going to be the first time, it's likely to be the first time there isn't a quarterback drafted in the top 100.
I
know you like the Houston guy, but I'm not sure if he goes top 3. And this is just something that is coming out of the Senior Bowl itself, not my opinion, but coming out of the Senior Bowl itself. So we'll see what happens with that. But I mean, Will Levis, he declined to come for whatever reason. And I don't understand that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't understand that because, you know, knowing what Carson Wentz was able to do, what some of these guys, you know, whether it's Kenny Pickett, whether it's Baker Mayfield, these guys went down there. You know, I'm not a big fan of Baker Mayfield, but he went down there and he showed proof.
He did.
You know, and he ended up being the number one pick. Yeah, Carson Wentz, the number 2 pick. Kenny Pickett, the first quarterback selected last year. So I think – it's really an opportunity for you to showcase the fact that you're a competitor, right?
Yep. And then also too, TD, is you're not a Bryce Young and you're not a CJ Stroud. I'm not talking about talent wise, but those guys are definitely going to go high in the draft. So now, why not show up and say, you know what, and make a case to say, you know what, I'm one of those top two guys.
Yeah.
I want to be one of those guys to where, you know what, to where at least you make the GM and the head coach think.
Right.
That's, you know what I'm saying? Not to be like, okay, whatever, he didn't show up, and we'll look at him on his individual workouts. But if you go and you go against competition, the best competition in the country, you're the Senior Bowl, and you shine, now you got the general manager and you got the head coach thinking like, if he's there, we might take him, and that's what you want.
Yeah, exactly. It's taking advantage of all opportunities.
True.
Now, listen. We don't know. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe he has a nick or something that he's dealing with that's keeping him from doing it. But I think if all things remain equal, he needs to be there. It's his decision, his future. So be it. But you talk about decisions. The biggest decision of the offseason was made. And you had Tom Brady announcing that he retired. That's huge news.
I know.
The thing that's interesting to me is – we know that Tom Brady is a guy that was tied into the Titans, right? Because and Tom Brady and Mike Vrabel are really good friends. So, okay, there, you got that correlation. The Titans are always going to be tied to him. But then you also have the whole thing about Trey Lance, right? And hey, you know, give up picks to go get Trey Lance because he and Rand Carthon worked together in San Francisco. It's just interesting how this quarterback situation is just kind of working itself out, right? You know, Tom Brady retired. Brock Purdy has the UCL injury that could cost him the full season, at the very minimum 6 months. So now Trey Lance is not a guy that I think is going to get traded. Not that I thought the Titans were going to do that in the first place. But when you look at this quarterback situation, where do the Titans go from here?
You know, GD, I really don't know, because I'm going to give you a list of names and you tell me, are they better than Tannehill, Baker Mayfield,
mm-mm,
Garoppolo,
mm-mm,
Teddy Bridgewater,
mm-mm,
Jacoby Brissett,
mm-mm,
Gardner Minshew.
Heck no.
So what is the obvious thing to do, TD? Stay with Tannehill and run it back. And just like what you talked about, you know, last week, who you trying to get next year in the draft?
Yeah, that is Caleb Williams.
Yeah. So why not run it back? But basically, TD, the Titans really don't have a choice. Because they can go draft, you know, a guy in the first round. But why not wait until next year and run it back with Tannehill this year and then go get a quarterback next year?
So let me ask you that. How do you think it would be received? We'll put you in the mix, okay? You're there in the locker room, right? You're one of the players, one of the receivers even.
Mm-hmm.
And the Titans decide, hey, you know what? We're going to save that $18 million,
mm-hmm,
and we're going to release Ryan Tannehill. We're going to sign a veteran, but we're going to have him and Josh Dobbs compete. And obviously we know that isn't going to put us in position to be a Super Bowl favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that, we're going to trade the 11th pick. And we're going to acquire another first-round pick with our eyes next year on moving up to get Caleb Williams. How do you receive that as a player?
You know, that'll be tough because basically what you're saying is we're starting all over. You know what I'm saying? But if you're keeping Tannehill, say, you know, okay, we want to run Tannehill this year, basically say we're going to try to run this thing back and try to win a championship. Because the thing about it is, when you got a new quarterback coming in, you got to mesh with him. You got to know his tendencies. You got to know what he likes, what he don't like, and work together and knowing what your quarterback does. But if you have Tannehill, you've been working with him for 2 years. You've been working with learning how to run routes. You've been learning with what he expects from you. But then when you got another quarterback that you don't know, you got to start the process all over again as opposed to, you know, starting, you know, above the eight ball.
Yeah, and that's the big problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. Who do you think should be the quarterback, though, when you look at this?
I'm a running back with Tannehill because you just said it right before the show that with Tom Brady retiring, that shakes up everything because just like what you talked about a minute ago, that, you know, Mike Vrabel and Tom Brady are friends, and when he said he retired, then now they got to go back to the drawing board to say what's best for the team, not what's the sexiest thing to do, because in the fans' mind or in the media's mind, they're like, get another quarterback and start all over. But this is what Carthon and the GM for the Titans and Mike Vrabel said, that they need to come together and do what's best for the team. Eliminate all the noise, eliminate all the stuff that a lot of people may say, but what's best for the team, and they got to go that way.
So that being said, when do you think they should come out and say Tannehill is the quarterback, if that's in fact what they're going to do?
They should actually do it now, because now, you know, when you get into the draft, now if you want to trade that 11th pick then and get more picks, then you can do that. But if you're trying to still search for a quarterback, then you got to take a quarterback at that number 11 spot. So it just kind of calms everybody's nerves, because now you kind of know the direction that the Tennessee Titans are going in. Because right now, we don't know if Tannehill's going to be here. We don't know if they're going to draft a quarterback. We don't know if, you know, Trey Lance, all these things are up in the air. But when you say that he's our quarterback, now you solidify the quarterback position, and that's exactly what you need.
How do you think that factors into this offensive coordinator situation, or in fact, like, what do you think is taking so long?
I don't know. I mean, I know they're going to interview Eric Bieniemy, but this is what I'll do. If I'm going to run it back again, I'm just going to keep Tim Kelly. My bad. I would just keep him in house, because he was a passing coordinator. He knows the system. He knows what to do. He knows Tannehill. He knows the receivers. He knows what to do. So why go and get somebody that you have to start all over with? Just get somebody in house, who we just talked about, so he can stay with the process and stay with the identity of the team. So I would stay with that guy and just hire in within.
Now, that being said, they went that same route the last time with Todd Downing. We see, obviously, a lot of factors, right? Injuries, you know, A.J. Brown being traded, et cetera. But we see that didn't quite work out. How do you think it will work out if Tim Kelly is hired from within? Like, do you think he has the ability? Because remember, his last year in Houston, he had the 32nd ranked offense.
I mean that's a great question, TD. I mean, you just don't know, but you know, the reason why I say keep him in there, he knows the system. I don't know how he is as a play caller, but if you have to bring a different offensive coordinator in, then you got to teach all the different concepts to the position coaches. Then now you got to teach all the concepts again to the players. But if you have him in house, they already know the concepts. They know the identity of what's actually going on. And I just think that that's the key, because you know the Tennessee Titans offense last year was kind of tough to watch a little bit, and I say it in a respectful way, but why not build off that and say, you know what, let's get better and fine-tune the things that we're not good at.
If Will Levis is there at 11, do you pick him?
Yes, I would go and get him. But then that gives you a security blanket that is, say, if Tannehill doesn't play well, and then next year, I know you want that cat from USC, but you still got a quarterback that's intact that can develop and mature as a quarterback in this league. So I think if he's there, I would take him, but also I would keep Tannehill, just have a security blanket.
Very interesting. What about Malik Willis? Is he someone that still deserves to be looked at?
Yeah, I think he does deserve to be looked at. The reason why I say that, because I look at the whole season of last year. I don't think it was fair to compare him of not being a bad quarterback in five games when, number one, the offensive line struggled a little bit. You had a couple of receivers you can throw to at times, and then you limit him from the play calls that you can give him. So I just don't think it's fair to evaluate him. I think you let him develop another year or another year and a half, another 2 years to see what he can do. But after that second year, and if he's not getting any better, then now you got to make a decision to let him go. But I just don't think it's fair to evaluate a kid that came into a position to not sit and learn, to not sit and understand the concept of being a leader as a quarterback. You're thrown into the fire with a bad offensive line and no receivers to throw to. You can't evaluate a guy like that.
Yeah, no, that's right. And then not to mention limited actual reps in practice at some type of resemblance of game speed. So
right.
that's all difficult there. So, yeah, man, I definitely wanted to get into those things. We'll see this quarterback situation, offensive coordinator. Yeah, it's interesting. It has to continue to work itself out, but it's just,
right. Wow.
So, yeah, that's all I can say about that one.
Man, but, you know, the thing about it is I think they need to make some quick decisions now, because you got the combine coming up. You got the draft coming up. So the decision needs to be made quickly so the GM, the head coach, and the offensive coordinator can all be on the same page. But if guys are absent and they don't have an offensive coordinator, how are you guys going to be on the same page, because you're behind the eight ball?
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, yeah, well, I'll end it on this, man. I was watching old Sixers tape, right? And this was back when they had to first introduce the black uniforms. And this guy, he wore number 9. Or was it 32? It was 30. I think it was 32. But it was funny because I was watching it with one of my daughters. And this was one you had met before. So she knew you. But she was like, hey, is that the guy that you do TV with? That you do the show with? I was like, nah, Drew. That's Tyrone Hill.
Man, get on my phone, man. That's cold.
What's up, everybody? Teron Davenport here for Superbook Sports. We know the final drive for the championship is here, and there's no better place to wager on the football title tilt than Superbook Sports. Superbook features the best menu of prop bets in the business. Plus, check out their special odds boosts and promotions at superbook.com. With over 3 decades of odds-making experience in Las Vegas, there's no better place to wager than Superbook Sports. Win some money as one lucky team wins the championship. Download the Superbook Sports app today. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789.
This is Traylon Burks, and I'm talking with TD.
Yeah, silly rabbit. You hear that music? You know what's coming up next, man. This is an inside joke. We always laugh at this song, man. And anytime that comes on, that means football game plans. Emory Hunt is coming on. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? Listen, the music is always, it always sets the tone, man.
That's right. That's right. You heard me. I had to sneak that silly rabbit in there, too. That's Orange Juice Jones, man, walking in the rain. That song is a trip. But I wanted to get you on because a lot of people say that the draft starts in Mobile. But for you, it starts week before that. So can you just kind of give us a Cliff Notes version of a couple of the games that you've been through and some of the prospects that stood out to you?
No, absolutely, man. For me, it starts in Daytona Beach with the FCS Bowl in January. I mean, sorry, early December. Then after that, you have the HBCU Pigskin Showdown, and then which is in Selma, Alabama. And then in January starts the College Gridiron Showcase, the Hula Bowl, Tropical Bowl, and NFLPA Shrine Game, and then right now at the Senior Bowl. So I've been to all these All-Star games and seen a bunch of prospects, man. And I will say this. It's cool to go to each All-Star game in a row like I do, because you start to see the different uptick in size and athleticism. Offensive line, defensive line looks different, but there are guys that really stood out. You know, I would say if you're looking for this year's Isaiah Pacheco, I believe I found him down at the Tropical Bowl in Ellis Merriweather out of UMass. You know, I watched his tape coming into the All-Star event. You know he can run the football. Had 1,400 yards last year for UMass. I think this year it was a little bit down, maybe 600 something yards. But I didn't know he can catch the football like that. And that's why you want to get to these All-Star games, because they show you, you know, how well guys can do what they're probably not asked to do at the collegiate level. So he had a really good week catching the football, downfield threat. He ran the ball rather well. He looks like a pro back. He's built like Julius Chestnut. He's built like runs like Isaiah Pacheco. So he was someone that really stood out. And at the College Gridiron Showcase, it was interesting because everyone right now is talking about Princeton's wide receiver, Andre Isavas, who was fantastic out here at the Senior Bowl. But his teammate, Dylan Classy, was also good at the College Gridiron Showcase. He's someone that he's about 5'10 and a half, 185 pounds, speed, slot receiver type, get in and out of his breaks really, really well. He's actually the leading receiver for Princeton. And in that same game, Cephas Johnson III, quarterback out of southeastern Louisiana, 6'5", he measured at 6'5", 226, played a little wide receiver at southeastern, but he was mainly the quarterback, and he was the best quarterback I thought out there at the College Gridiron Showcase. Really raised a lot of eyebrows throwing the football.
That's interesting that you mentioned those names, and I'm definitely going to keep track of them. And it's good what you say, though, about going to those games and you get to see a different aspect. Good example for me was Corey Clement. If you remember, like 4 or 5 years ago when he was down there in Mobile, we didn't know that he could catch the ball the way that he did and be able to return punts. And I remember seeing that, like, wow, okay, I thought he was just one of those high-volume backs, but here he is able to catch the football out of the backfield. So that's definitely a great point. I want to bring it up to the Shrine Bowl and just give me a couple pointers on Zay Flowers as well as A.T. Perry. Now, you know A.T. Perry is a guy that I really like out of Wake Forest, a big receiver there. But what did you see from those guys in the brief time that you were there?
You know, it's interesting because just the prior week I was earlier in the week I was at the NFLPA Bowl. And so you see even an uptick in talent from that to the Shrine game. And Zay Flowers didn't practice the first day. He was out there in sweat. And people was wondering, is he going to practice? The rumor was going around that he said he was going to practice the following day and only do things. He was going to do everything that did not involve a defense. So he was going to do individuals, and that was about it. And so somebody must have got to him and talked to him. So the next day he came out and practiced fully, and you almost immediately was like, this guy shouldn't be here. He is Senior Bowl guy all the way. Mm-hmm. Just a different level of explosiveness, acceleration. I mean, he looks like a pro receiver moving and running routes more so than anyone out there. So it was just fantastic to see. Like, wow, it really popped at you. Like, this is a pro guy, clearly. A.T. Perry had an up-and-down week. He was, you know, he had some reps where he couldn't really separate. Once he threw him inside and had him run some drills where you get a two-way go, he's able to have some success and use his size to his advantage. So you kind of can see where he can be utilized. He might end up being that big slot guy or be a bigger Z receiver where they put him on the move. Mm. And I think everybody was also shocked that he measured in at 6'3", because we know we all been through this, TD, where the college roster is the 2-inch and 20-pound cheat, or 10-pound cheat, 2-inch, right? So everyone just assumed he was going to be 6'5", closer to 6'6". No, he was 6'3", but still, for a bigger guy, he was well put together. And I thought, you know, when they started to play around with him in terms of moving him around, you started to see the best of A.T. Perry.
That's what's up. And we're talking to Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan, the man you know is the czar of the playbook. Let's move it forward to the Senior Bowl, and I want to get your take on some of the offensive linemen. I know the one-on-ones, that's always the good thing to see, but when that carries over to just the team period and those things, inside run, you know, that's something that I love to watch. What are some of the things that you've seen from any particular offensive lineman?
Well, this has been a common theme all throughout these All-Star Game travels of mine, this cycle. And I put this out in a tweet the other day. These BYU prospects have been killing it all throughout this All-Star circuit. Every game that has had a BYU prospect in it, they've been doing exceptionally well. And I'm talking this time in particular the offensive linemen. We saw at the NFLPA Bowl, BYU lineman was doing great. At the College Gridiron Showcase, BYU had an offensive lineman. Here at the Senior Bowl, Blake Freeland, the offensive lineman, 6'7", 312, has, you know, defensive ends in crisis mode on the outside. They can't get past him at once. And we know that's kind of heavily slanted toward the defense side of football.
Right.
And he's been consistently winning. So, and he's also doing a great job in 907 and team versus team. So he's been excellent all week long. And so when you're watching these guys just compete, it's like, man, they really came in prepared, ready to go. You look at Minnesota having a really good showing as well. They had a corner that was really great out at the Shrine game. Now you got John Michael Schmidt, the offensive lineman. He's another one that had, on the interior, had these bull-rushing defensive linemen just with no answers because he had an answer for every counter. So for me, those two guys, along with Jarrett Patterson of Notre Dame, 6'4", 307, he really stood out also.
What about the ODU guy, Nick Saldivari?
I have to watch him more exclusively. I haven't really – you know how it is out here at the All-Star game. You got to really go and, you know, watch in sections and parts. But when guys flash, it's because they're making a dynamic player, had a dynamic rep. So I have to really go in and watch more exclusively to see how he's doing.
Okay. And the reason why I ask is I know we had Jim Nagy on last week, and he said that's a guy that he felt was going to really have his stock rise. I ask you about this offensive lineman, and, I mean, it's hard to miss him. He's 6'8", 375, and that's DeJuan Jones. Have you gotten to see him out there just kind of engulfing guys and using that 89-inch wingspan to his advantage?
it's funny you bring him up because and what you said is so true. It's hard to miss him because everyone today is like, where the hell is he? Because he's not out here today, right? And so I don't know if he shut it down for the rest of the week because yesterday he had himself a fantastic day. And if you're standing 6'8", and we know NFL height, they love to push you down. And so if he's NFL 6'8", we already know he's probably like 6'10". So he's legit, long, athletic. He had a really solid day in one-on-ones. It's hard when we always preach the hands first battle. And because of those long arms, he's going to win that battle 9 times out of 10.
Yep.
And if he's able to get his hands on you first, rep over, you know, just because you're not going to be able to disengage. He's going to absorb a bull rush because he's standing so tall. So it makes him a tough offensive lineman to face. And because he was winning so consistently with his hands yesterday, he was dominating. And so today I have to do my reporter work and try to see if I can find out why he's not at practice. Because he's definitely out there today. But the flip side of that, we saw Malik Cunningham, who came up from the NFLPA game. He was out there yesterday, but not in pads because he was nursing a stomach bug issue. But he's out there today throwing the football and throwing it really well.
Yeah, that's what's up, man, Malik Cunningham. And that was a good interview that you had with him from last week. And, you know, it's always good to put a spotlight on those quarterbacks that aren't getting the same attention. While we're on the offensive line side of things, and we're talking to Emory Hunt, a football game plan, I want to – obviously, he's not down there, but this is a guy that when you look at some of the different analysts and things like that, Peter Skoronski, they say, hey, you know what? He doesn't have the long arms to be able to play tackle. As someone who has originated, the size is not a skill aspect. And we talked about the long arms and how that, or the short arms and how it was supposed to hurt, you know, Roger McCreary, who had a solid year as a rookie corner. How does an offensive lineman overcome that? And why do you think a guy like Skoronski can still play tackle with those quote-unquote short arms?
That's a great segue and lead in, TD, because we kind of alluded to it just a few seconds ago when we talked about winning the hands first battle. And I will use a boxing reference here. On paper, it was like, hey, if you're able to jab Mike Tyson, you keep him away.
Mm-hmm.
How did that work out for boxers? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mike never had reach. He never had the longest arms. But he had the knockout power. He had the fastest hands, the quickest hands, and was putting you on your back pretty quickly. So that's the answer. If you don't have long arms, you better win the hands first battle, or you better have quick hands to be able to reset and then redirect.
Right.
And those are going to be the things that those guys that usually have shortcomings tend to figure out. Because, again, he's had those short arms his entire career. And it's not like he's playing in a small conference. He's playing in the Big Ten, where we know they have a lot of long, lengthy, athletic edge guys that also can bull rush. So he's going up against these top-tier edge rushers consistently, each and every week, even within his own squad at practice. So as long as you have fast hands, quick hands, and able to win the hands first battle, and it seems like he's mastered that skill, the arm length is irrelevant. We also say this, you know, growing up, you know, we say, hey, man, you big for nothing. Yeah, and 9 times out of 10, we talk about the guy that had the size or the height but couldn't really play how his height or size suggests.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that means. So if you're able to supersede your shortcomings, it's irrelevant. That's why we come up with the size is not a skill thing, because you could have the arms that, you know, tie your shoestrings while you're standing up. And if you can't get them up quick, then what good is it? So
yeah.
I think because he's able to do, you know, quick things with his hands, it helps him overcome those perceived shortcomings.
Excellent point. I want to flip it to the other side real quick. The DBs, you texted me the other day about the DBs, and you know how we crack up when they do some of the things they do, but who are some of the DBs that have stood out? I know the Kansas State guy, Julius Brents, had a solid day on Tuesday, but from your perspective, who stood out?
Well, first of all, if you let a DB make a play, it's a wrap. Like, you don't hear about the whole practice. And today, they let a DB make a play, and it was the last, it ended the period. Oh, they're going to talk about this for the rest of the week. It's a wrap. There's no more getting stuff out. But Caillou Blue Kelly of Stanford was outstanding today. elite ball skills. And his greatest interception today, he nearly had two. He had one during a team period where he jumped in front of a pass and picked it off. He was just standing on the sideline, and it was a errant throw, and he just backhand, one hand snagged it. And then he goes into the practice, goes into nine on team versus team, and picks off a pass and nearly had another one. So he was on fire today. He measured in at 6 feet, 193 pounds. And Daniel Scott, the safety out of Cal, matching up well as a corner, doing a great job. And it's funny to watch people be shocked by other guys' athleticism because, and you know the reason why when I say this name. So Riley Moss out of Iowa, if you watch college football the entire time he's been at Iowa, you know he's athletic. You know he's one of the fastest dudes in the country. So he ran fast, and, you know, they have everybody, you know, wired with the analytics, right? So they post up on the Jumbotron who ran the fastest, who clocked the fastest in pass. And everybody's like, Riley Moss, wow, I didn't know he was that fast. All because he's a white defensive back. So now be prepared to hear all these Jason Seahorn comparisons coming out from him. But he's been having a really good week, 2 days of practice as well. So and the second practice is going to start in a few, you know, like a couple, maybe like 20 minutes or so like that. So on the other team, Tyreek Stevenson out of Miami, the cornerback, you know, really harkened back to the old school days when Miami always had a really good corner and really good receivers. He's been out here doing a great job in one-on-ones and making sure he's able to play the ball and play through the receiver's hands. So he's been great so far this week.
Yeah, yeah. And it's crazy because a lot of people are pigeonholing Riley Moss as a safety, but he actually has the corner skills. I'm glad you mentioned him. And you know how it is, man. The white DBs, they always get disrespected, man. You know, but it is what it is. real quick before we get you out of here, defensive-wise, whether it's outside linebacker, defensive end, anybody popping out, Will McDonald IV, he's a guy that I wanted to see coming in. But anybody for you that has popped out so far?
Man, if I'm drafting linebackers, and this is just based off the eye test, give me Deion Henley out of Washington State, who's had a fantastic day. He was the one that went undefeated in one-on-ones versus the running backs. And we know that's a really hard drill for those guys. And Marte Mapu out of Sacramento State, give me him as well. He's another one. He played corner. Now he's a linebacker. Mm. And this is someone that was at the NFLPA Bowl, was a standout there in one-on-one coverage, not just versus running backs, versus tight ends, versus receivers, running down the field in coverage. Here yesterday, he was so good in coverage, like he was at the NFLPA Bowl, that they had, you know how they close out practice with one-on-ones, like, hey, you make this play, or the offense has to do push-ups, or the defense has to do push-ups.
Yeah.
So they had him go one-on-one with Eric Gray, the running back out of Oklahoma, who had a really good day yesterday, locked him up, batted the ball away, didn't break a sweat. So those two guys, with the way the NFL is played, they're both coverage backers. Henley is a little bit thicker at 230. Marte Mapu is at 217. So he may even be a strong safety. But, you know, that kind of is a crossover between strong safety and weak side linebacker nowadays. So those two guys at linebacker have been tremendous.
Man, that's a great in-depth take around the whole roster for both teams. So I appreciate you coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure that you stay tuned to footballgameplan.com. There will be a draft guide coming out. And this one, it goes all the way down to whether it be Shippensburg, whether it's Frostburg State, what have you. There's no stone unturned. So make sure you go ahead and you get this when it comes out. I'll be promoting it as we go throughout the draft season. We'll have Emery back on, excuse me. But as I said, footballgameplan.com, that's where you go. Emery, I appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, man. Appreciate you having me.
For sure. So that was Emery Hunt, the czar of the playbook from Football Game Plan. Always good getting a chance to talk shop with him. I'm glad we were able to run through the Senior Bowl and look at some of the prospects there. The Senior Bowl is actually on ESPN. So make sure you check that out throughout the week. And obviously on Saturday when the game is played, that will be on NFL Network. So for sure, man, we're just going to keep this thing rolling. It's draft season. We'll have the prospect interviews starting soon. We're putting some things in place to get some of those guys and keep it rolling, man. So always a great opportunity to talk shop and to learn about these players. And, hey, man, this time last year, we were rolling heavy about Chig Okonkwo. You know,
yes, we were.
You see what happened. He's the guy that ended up with the Titans. So let's see if we could do this again, you know, forecast a guy correctly to the team. And, you know, next up at the Senior Bowl, you got the combine. And I tell you, like I said in the intro, this thing just continues to roll. The league has it set to where there's no downtime. So that being said, we'll make sure we keep bringing everything that we got for you each and every week. And definitely shout out to Emory Hunt for coming on Football Game Plan, as well as Chris Sanders, Forever Titans receiver. David James over there.
Yes, sir.
Making it happen. We'll keep it going, man. Until then, above all else, we appreciate you. Search us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Talking with TD, rate, review. We appreciate you.